would be true, that you would be our great delight and reward. I mean, that's what we long for. We know it's right. We know there is nothing, there is no one that compares to you. And it would be right, good, for us to live as if you were our great treasure, our delight, and our reward. But this week I didn't live that way. And that was evil. I turned my attention to lesser joys, and that was evil. Rather than looking to you, the fountain of living water, I looked to broken cisterns, pleasures of my own creating, pursuits set out by my own desires, and did not live as if you were that which was most to be treasured. That's wrong. It doesn't honor you. It's wrong because it makes my life a mess. But we've come this morning to be reoriented, to be reminded, to have our hearts called back to see you as the one great treasure, to experience you as the rightful delight and reward of our souls. Would you be pleased to continue to work in our midst, to, in grace, in sovereign grace, draw us to see you, and seeing you, to be amazed, and being amazed to love you, and to love you to find our delight in you, and to live as if you were our great treasure. Work this in us. We long for it. And Lord, I ask this morning that you might honor your word. Would it please you to, by your Spirit, open your word to your people in this place where they're good and for your glory? Place a guard and watch over my mouth. Let my words be pleasing to you. Let my heart be acceptable to you because of Christ and for his sake. And may you make Jesus magnificent in our eyes today. And may we leave changed because we spent time with him. Speak a word to us that we need to hear. Because we're attentive. We're here. We're to listen. We're giving ourselves to you. May your glory grow, Father. Jesus, may your fame spread. Spirit, may your power be felt in this place today. Amen.
Feel for Matt. It's really hard when you're physically not all together there and you still have to do what you... hard. I mean, sometimes when I've had to preach and not feeling very well, it's really hard to give yourself to the task at hand when you're not feeling up to it. It's hard to stand up and shoulder responsibilities that are yours when you're not feeling it. It's like it's difficult to make that sales presentation when your head is throbbing and you can't seem to think right. It's challenging to plan the meals and to do the shopping and to cook for the family when a fever's got a hold of your body. You're just barely making it through the store and kind of hard to focus. You don't want to be in the spotlight at school to make a presentation when your face is breaking out. Big and little ways when your body is not quite up to par. You just want to fade into the background. Please just excuse me for life for a little bit. I'm taking a break. And that's how we feel sometimes when something's not right physically for us. I have got to think that that is some of how the man that we meet in Mark chapter 3 must have been feeling. Mark chapter 3 tells us about a man with a withered hand. The language suggests it was fully gone. I mean, withered, it was entirely dried up. It was good for nothing. And yet he's in the synagogue on a Sabbath morning. And that's what he does on the Sabbath. I mean, like, you all are here this morning because this is Sunday, and that's why you're here. And I expect that he probably would be glad to hang in the back and just to get done with the Sabbath service and be on his way. But Jesus spoke to him. Jesus called to him. He's back there in the back, in the synagogue, perhaps in the shadows. And Jesus said, "Hey, excuse me, you there?" Yes, you, the one with the crippled hand. Would you come forward and stand here in front of everyone, please? If I watch Jesus interact with this man, trying to get into his skin and try to understand what's going on, I think it can't be far from the truth for the man to have thought, "You want me to do what? You want me to do what? You want me to come up there and stand in front of that? No, thank you." I think he's probably back there very content to be hiding, and yet Jesus says, no, I want you to come and stand up here in front forever. I want to visit with that man today. I kind of want to sit down and listen and experience and learn from him. Because I think there's something going on with that man, as inconvenient and uncomfortable it might have been. I want to take a closer look at what Jesus is doing with the man. Last week we met the man because Charlie was walking us through a portion of the Gospel of Mark. We're in Mark because we need to know Jesus. We're in Mark because real life is connected to Jesus. We're in the Gospel of Mark because lots of us have bad snapshots that we carry around. Oh, look, this is what Jesus is like. And the truth is, he doesn't look anything like that. And we're trying to swap out our bad image of Jesus with a good image of Jesus by listening to what Mark has to tell us. And last week, Charlie walked us through the last part of chapter 2 and the first part of chapter 3, where there was some controversy about the Sabbath. And Charlie did a great job of helping explain to us this contrast between the way Jesus was looking at life, which was about relationship and life with God, and the way the religious leaders were looking at life, which was about rules. Charlie contrasted life with religion for us. And so Charlie introduced us in a sense, and we got to visit with the Pharisees and the scribes and Jesus. But there's someone else in this story in Mark chapter 3 that we didn't get much time with last week, and that's the man with the withered hand. I'm not going to cover the same ground. We're going to actually visit with somebody else. We're going to learn something else about how Jesus interacts with people and why he does the things that he does, and maybe get a little thought as to what he might be doing with us this morning. And so we're going to be in Mark chapter 3 again, the first six verses. If you have a copy of the scriptures, I'd encourage you to open there and follow along as I read Mark chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Again, Jesus entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand, and they, that's the Pharisees, that's the scribes, the religious leaders, they were watching Jesus to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. And so Jesus said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here," literally, "rise and hear." Get up and come here. And he then said to the religious leaders, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" They kept silent. And Jesus looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. And then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. And the Pharisees went out immediately and held counsel with the Herodians against Jesus, how they might destroy him. Well, Charlie, like I said, unpacked for us last week the issue of the Sabbath controversy. Some great insight there about the contrast between being religious and having life. The new kind of life that Jesus was bringing was stretching the wineskins of the religious leaders. But there's something else here that I don't want to overlook. I want to think about what is Jesus doing with the man. Is the man just a tool to use? Is he just an object lesson? Did Jesus show up there in the synagogue that Sabbath morning and looked around and said, "No flannel graph, no puppets. I need an object lesson. Oh, you there, you who look so uncomfortable, why don't you come up here and I'll use you?" I don't think Jesus does that kind of thing. You know, knowing enough about Jesus as we've been journeying through Mark, I don't think Jesus uses people like they're objects. Something else is going on here. And I think it has everything to do with what Jesus says to the man. And both things that Jesus says to the man, I think, prompted the same response initially. Jesus says to the man, "Rise and come forward." And then he says, "Stretch out your hand." Those aren't suggestions. Those are commands. Jesus is giving the man a command. And I think both times the man heard the command in his discomfort and reluctance, I think he probably initially thought, "You want me to do what? You want me to come forward? You want me to stretch out my hand?" I think he rightly would have gone, "Excuse me?" I want to think about that a little bit, because I think what Jesus is doing there with the man give me some insight as to how Jesus deals with me. So let's try to pay attention. Listen to what Jesus is saying and what he's doing. First, he says to the man, rising, come forward. Why does he do that? Why make the man, who's perfectly comfortable hiding back there in the shadows, stand up and come forward? Can't Jesus heal him where he sits? Certainly. Jesus could just say a word. You back there, you're well, you can go. But Jesus doesn't do that. He says, hey, you, come on up here, stand up here. Jesus' reputation for healing is widespread. In fact, the Pharisees were told they're waiting to see whether he'll heal on the Sabbath. They're anticipating it. But why call the man forward? Is he just using the man? No. No. Jesus intends to heal the man. Jesus intends to do good to the man. But apparently, Jesus is intending to make evident to others his own goodness and grace and power by putting his power on display in and through this man. In other words, what Jesus is doing in and for the man is not for his benefit only. Jesus wants to let others in on it in a way that will be of benefit to them. Obviously, the benefit to the man with the withered hand is different, greater, perhaps, than the benefit to the others. But Jesus is doing something in the man's life, wants to do something in the man's life that is not going to only impact the man, but is going to send ripples out broader than that. So I think part of the reason why Jesus invites the man to come forward and stand up here is not to expose the man to embarrassment or humiliation, but because Jesus wants to do good to him, Jesus wants to heal him, Jesus wants to bless him, but he wants the blessing to go farther than that. What he's about to do in the man's life is not for the man's benefit only. Jesus intends to address the man's need in such a way that his glory, his goodness, his grace, and his power, and his wisdom is put on display before others, not just the man. His initial purpose is to bless the man, but more than that. His intention is to do good to the man, but more than that. But the truth is, I usually hide my needs. I know about you, but I tend not to parade my needs. I tend to not let people know that I have needs. The truth is, I want Jesus to help me and heal me and cure me and care for me and rescue me. I just don't want you to know that I need help and healing and caring and curing and rescuing. I'd much rather hide my needs. Please don't. Because I have this mistaken notion that you'll think really well of Jesus if I have no needs. How ridiculous is that? According to Paul's letter to the Ephesians, Paul is writing to Christians in the second chapter of Ephesians. He's talking to them about what God is doing in their lives as Christians. In Ephesians chapter 2, Paul writes and says, but God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. That's your benefit, you know. You used to all be dead. Now you're alive because of Jesus. But he doesn't stop there. You've been made alive together with Christ and raised, and he raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Here's why. So that. Why did Jesus make you alive? Why did he take you out of death? Why did he bring you into the family? So that in the coming ages he might show the immeasurable riches of his grace and kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. Do you know what Paul is saying there? You're a display case for the grace and glory of God. That's what Paul is saying. What God is doing in your life, is it a benefit to you to be saved? Absolutely. Is it a benefit to you to come from death to life? Absolutely. Is what God's doing simply giving you life? No. He's putting himself on display for the universe to see. He's not using you. He's doing good to you. But the benefit that is accruing to you in being saved is spreading out, and the universe gets to see God's goodness and glory. And Jesus is going to put his grace on display in this man's life for others to see. And the truth is, Jesus wants to work in your life, in my life, in such a way that others will be impressed with him. Not so that they'll be impressed with you. Oh, you're that person who has no needs, no struggles, no sin, no affliction, nothing that Jesus could do for you. You're really impressive. That's not what Jesus is about. I don't want to make this healing in Mark chapter 3 an allegory. Jesus really did this. But why and how Jesus deals with this man gives me insight into how Jesus does the stuff that he does and why he does. And friends, there are times when Jesus is going to do something in your life. There are times when Jesus wants to do something in your life, and it's not all about you. He's going to want to do something in your life and put his glory and grace on display so others can see through the lens of your life. And that may mean that in some way he will call to you and say, rise and come forward. Step out of the obscurity and let others recognize and see that you have needs that I'm going to address. I want to go there. We're afraid that if people became aware of our desperate need, if people became aware of our withered condition, our afflictions, our lacks, then they'll focus on that. Right, like that happened on this Sabbath morning. The guy comes forward. He has this withered hand. It gets healed. And what did everybody talk about?
Jesus.
Wow. That's what's supposed to happen. We're afraid that if people knew we had needs that Jesus could meet or had met, we'd be afraid they'd be thinking about us.
I don't think so. You're not that important.
I think they'd be thinking about him. They'd be going, wow, did you see what Jesus did? That person had a need. And Jesus, he did such an incredible thing. That's what happens here. It's so it just may be that if Jesus is working in your life, you may have needs that he is going to. Well, I guess you could put it this way. Jesus may expose our neediness so that he can put his glory on display. Jesus may expose our neediness so that he can put his glory on display. But there's another thing that Jesus says to this guy that I'm sure got that, you want me to do what? Kind of response. After having come and stood forward, Jesus then tells the man, stretch forth your hand. You have to understand how that was heard. Hey, stretch forth your hand. I can't. It's withered. What's the man thinking? That's the one thing it's impossible for me to do. You are calling me to do the impossible thing. I cannot do that. It's withered. Thanks for making me feel so comfortable by calling me to stretch forth my withered hand. No, Jesus commands him to do the one thing he believes to be impossible. The man likely knew that Jesus had healed people. His reputation was widespread. The man may, in fact, have concluded when Jesus called him forward that maybe Jesus was going to do some good to him. The man could well have anticipated a number of things, but I don't think he anticipated Jesus looking at him and going, hey, now stretch it out. I'm sure he's looking around. Who? Stretch what out? No, your withered hand. I want you to stretch out your withered hand. And I'm thinking he must have said, well, make it well, and then I'll stretch it out. As soon as it looks different, I'll stretch it out. I'll be glad to stretch out this hand. That one is withered. It's impossible. I can't stretch that hand out. We have to get this. This is how Jesus ministers to people. He looks at their needs and then addresses the need with a creative, powerful, gracious word and tells the man, stretch out his hand. Jesus calls the man to do what is impossible, what he cannot do in himself, so that Jesus can put himself on display. Don't you understand? If Jesus only called you to do what you were already able to do, then who'd get the glory? He would. If Jesus had asked the man to stretch out the other hand, man would have done that, right? Big deal. He's always been able to do that. No, no. It's when Jesus commands the man to do the impossible thing that Jesus' glory gets put on display. Because now the man, giving into the command, says as he stretched it out, it was restored. Jesus commands impossible things so that when we do what he commands, the glory can be seen to be his. The power can be seen to be his. The grace is seen to be his. He puts his goodness and power and wisdom and love on display. And the truth is, this is how Jesus always does it. I mean, just think with me a little bit about the Gospels. Jesus meets a lame guy. What does he tell the lame guy? Hey, get up. Hey, they lowered me down in a basket. No, Jesus says, hey, lame guy, rise, take up your pallet, and what does the guy do? He gets up, takes up his pallet, and walks. He could not do that had the command not come. But with the command comes the enablement, the power, the grace to do it. Jesus looks at deaf guys and he says, hear this, and they do. Jesus speaks to blind people and says, see, and they see. Jesus commands the impossible, and in commanding the impossible, provides what is necessary for the impossible to be done. Because otherwise, we will not experience the kind of life Jesus wants for us. Because candidly, you all just do the stuff that's possible, right? That's how you do your life. You only do what's possible. To live the kind of life Jesus wants for you, it's going to require more than that. Remember Lazarus? Right? Guy behind the big rock? Been there for a while? 3 days? Jesus knows. He stands in front of the tomb, and what does he say? Lazarus, come here. That's an impossible command. Dead people don't walk out of tombs, right? The truth is, spiritually dead people don't live either, unless they're commanded to. That's what your conversion was. Do you understand that's what your conversion was? Paul says you were dead in your trespasses and sins. You had no life with God. What happened? Jesus commanded you to believe. And you did. And what happened when you believed? Now you had life. Had he not commanded you to live, had he not commanded you to believe, you would still be dead in your trespasses and sins. In fact, look at how Jesus calls the disciples, Peter and James and Andrew and John. He's walking by and he says, you follow me. You know what would have happened had he not said that? They would not have followed. But when he says, you follow me, then he says, and I will make you become fishers of men. What you cannot do in yourself, I am commanding, and it's going to happen. You're going to be different men. What I'm commanding will happen, and you will experience life differently. Stretch out your withered hand. Rise from that pallet. Come and follow me. Believe and have life. Jesus commands the impossible, because if he does not command the impossible, we will not live. If he does not command the impossible, then we will not experience the change in life that we need. Jesus is not surprised or weirded out by your needs. You know that, right? Jesus is not taken aback by the fact that you have needs. That's why he commands what he does. Because he knows the need. We're afraid, like, I can't do this, and I have all that. How can he want me to do that? Well, he knows the need. He wasn't weirded out when he called the man with the withered hand. The guy came up there, and he went, oh, whoa, withered hand. Oh, I don't know if I can do anything about that. He knew that need. Bring that need up here. We're going to do something about that. Stretch it out. And then I stretched it out, and it was restored. Jesus, he wasn't weirded out about it. He wasn't weirded out about the fact Lazarus was back there in the tomb. He'd been dead 3 days, stunk really bad. Jesus still commanded life. What does this mean? I see Jesus do this all the time. It seems to me that what this means is that Jesus is going to call us to do what we could never do apart from his call. Jesus is going to speak words into our lives that seem impossible, but unless he speaks those words into our lives and we give into it, we will not experience life. We will not experience the life he wants for us. Jesus may expose your neediness so he can put his glory on display, and in doing that, he is going to speak a command to you. He's going to say words to you that you will initially react to by saying, that's impossible. But with his command will come the empowerment to do what he wants for you, so that you can experience the life that he wants for you. Let me try to think with you a little bit about how this translates down into life. Your need is the occasion for his grace. Your need is the occasion for his grace, and his command is the doorway into the experience of that grace. your need is the occasion for His grace and His commands to you. In that place of need is your doorway into the experience of that grace. Maybe it is your chastity that's withered. Maybe you're in a relationship that's inappropriate, unhealthy. Maybe you feel like you have no self-control. Maybe you feel like this relationship is giving you stuff that your other relationship, the right one, isn't giving you. And so you don't feel anyway. I can't give this up. And Jesus says, no, flee immorality, live pure. And you go, I can't do that. Well, of course not. Because if you could be doing that, then you would be doing that. The reason why you're stuck in sin is apart from His command, His grace, His power, you're not. But now when He says, no, live pure, flee that, end that, when that command comes, all of the empowerment, enablement needed to live differently comes with that word. And the only thing you have to say is, not. You want to do what? The only thing you have to say is yes. And as you stretch out whatever's withered. See, the truth is most of us don't have withered limbs in this room. None of you have withered limbs. But some of you have withered souls. Some of you have withered spirits. For some of you, it's the love for God that's withered. And He commands you, love me. For some of you, it's in relationship kind of things. Maybe it's your love for your spouse that's withered. That you're just going through the motions. You're just keeping time. And Jesus looks to the husbands and He says, love your wives. You know, that doesn't mean benignly tolerate. That's not what it means. Love means have deep affection that ushers into real sacrificial living. And you say, that love, that's not been there for a really long time. And Jesus, if you knew my wife, then... And Jesus' command comes and He says, no, love your wife the way I love you. And you could stand there and go, who, me? What? Yeah. Or you could hear Jesus' command and stretch out your withered love. And you know what would happen? You would love your wife. Because what He commands, He enables. What He commands, He empowers. Maybe it's respect. Maybe you, as the wife, the respect is gone. He doesn't deserve it. He hasn't earned it. Interestingly enough, in Scriptures, it's not commanded that you give it because he deserves it or earns it. Wives, respect your husbands. Why? Because that's what Jesus calls you to. But that man never does. I don't care what that man does or does not do, because the command comes to you, respect your husband. And you could look around and go, who's he talking to? Can't be talking to me. Because of my husband, he doesn't deserve that. No, that's kind of... That's like the man with the withered hand. He can't be talking to me. Stretch this hand out because I don't have a good hand. All those people back there, they could stretch out hands, but I can't stretch out this hand because it's withered. Maybe it's forgiveness. Maybe there's a relationship that has just been wicked and hard, and you've been hurt again and again and again and again. And you hear the words from Jesus, forgive. As I've forgiven you, forgive. And you're standing there going, not me, it's withered. I got a good crop of bitterness growing. And He commands you to stretch out your forgiveness. And you go, not until I feel it. Not until He changes, not until that person changes then. But you know what? You're the one that's not experiencing life. You're the one that's stuck. Jesus looks at your need, where you are withered, where you are not living the way He wants you to, and He commands you to give in to what He wants to do. And as you do that, you'll be healed. That's why He's doing it. Maybe it's your integrity. Maybe it's your serving that is absent. You know He calls you to serve and you just don't. Maybe it's the way you care for your kids that you feel you have no more patience or wisdom. And He asks you to be patient and loving and you go, nope, I'm all out of that. Oh, no. He says He'll provide the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control in abundance. But you can stand there all you want with it withered and go, nope, not me. I don't have it, can't do it, that's impossible. But you've got to hear this. Jesus commands the impossible in the midst of your need so that you can experience life like never before. What's it going to look like to rise and come forward? What's it going to look like to give into an impossible command? Well, like I said, I don't think Jesus is interested in humiliating or embarrassing the guy. But he does want the need to be known so that his grace and power can be seen. Maybe that'll mean that we'll have to start to be really honest about the fact that we're really needy. Show of hands, how many of us? No, don't do that. Maybe it'll mean that there'll be someone that you'll have to confess to. I have really messed up here, and I've told no one. And because I've told no one, I've not talked to God about it. And there's no way that Jesus is speaking any healing words there because I'm just hiding that need. Maybe it'll come up in a community group. Maybe a good friend. Maybe it'll just be a quiet moment with you and the Lord. That would be perfectly fine as well. When you start to admit, yeah, I really have a need. This is really withered. It's gone long enough. I'd really like some change. And then as you open up and admit the need, I think you're going to hear Jesus say, here's what we're going to do about that. And where that point of need is, he's going to start to speak. And you might initially hear, no, he'll call you to forgive, or he'll call you to love, or he'll call you to serve, or he'll call you to die, or he'll call you to surrender, or he'll call you to rejoice, or he'll call you to believe, and you'll argue with him. That's impossible. I can't do that. It's not in me. And he'll go, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. That's why I'm calling that out from you. That's why I'm speaking that word to you. And then you listen for Jesus' impossible call, and then you give into it. And life will change for you. Because he doesn't want to leave you the same. Now, I've been wrestling for 2 weeks with this message and how we get our arms around this. Go ahead and close your Bibles and put your notes down. You don't need to take notes any further. But I want you to do some honest soul searching. I want you to spend the next few minutes talking with the Lord. The worship team is going to come, and they're going to lead a song that you can listen to. You don't have to join right in. And I'm going to invite you to reflect a little bit about what Jesus is talking to you about this morning, because in this picture of the man with the withered hand, I think I find myself. There's stuff in my life that is just nigh to dead. And I'm not experiencing the kind of life Jesus intends for me. What am I going to do about that? Well, Jesus says, one, you got to admit the need. Secondly, I want to speak to you about that. So as we continue in the service and worship, I want to invite you to a couple of things. First, no pressure, no have to. But as we continue to worship, if you are aware of a need in your life that Jesus needs to address, why don't you just stand where you are? The people around you won't know what the need is. I'm not asking you to confess it to anybody. I'm just simply asking you to be very honest before God. And there's nothing magical about standing. You don't have to. But it's one way to say, I'm in hiding. I'd like to stand back in the corner, in the dark. I don't want to admit that there's not something withered in me. I'm really good. But if there's a need that you really feel that you want, maybe it's a sin that has just had a grip on you for a really long time, it's time to be done. Maybe it's a relationship that's unhealthy that needs to end. Maybe it's a relationship that needs to be pursued that you've ignored. Whatever the need might be where you're feeling withered, if you feel the need, then I'm just asking you to stand and then continue to worship. And then as you continue to worship, ask the Lord to speak to you, tell you where you need to grow, what you need to hear. And whatever he tells you, wherever the need is, whatever he says, whatever needs to be stretched forth, whatever needs to be extended, wherever you need to lean into what he's doing, once you hear that, like the man did. There's nothing magical about raising your hand. It's just a token. It's just a symbol. It's a way to say, yes, I won't pull back any longer. I'm going to stretch out my withered love, my withered forgiveness, my withered faith, my little joy, my lack of service. I'm going to stretch out because you commanded me that I would taste new life because of your coming. Let's worship. Time for you in here.